There have been a lot of difficult conversations since the events in Charlottesville, Virginia earlier this month. A counter-protester was killed at a white supremacist rally after a man rammed his car into a crowd. The white supremacists gathered in Charlottesville to protest the removal of Confederate statues.
One extremely difficult conversation about this news is with your kids. And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. How do you talk to your children about events like this? How do you explain issues of race or racial inequalities with your children? And if you're a teacher, how do you address these topics in your classroom? You can call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Andrew Grant Thomas is the co-founder of Embrace Race, a community of support for parents and other caregivers working to raise, their aim is to raise informed, thoughtful, and brave children. Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob, it's good to be with you.
Well, the main case you seem to be making at Embrace Race is that it's important for parents to start talking to their kids about race. Why is it important?
For one, certainly it's important to start talking. It's important to start talking early because, first and foremost, because kids are developing their racial sensibilities very, very early, right? So, you know, we know that at 6 months, literally at 6 months even earlier, kids are making distinctions on the base, certainly can make distinctions on the base of race. And we know that, you know, by the time they end their kindergarten, most kids are making value judgments about the on the basis of race, right? About associating good and bad, positive and negative qualities with members of different racial groups. So, yeah, we need to start talking early.
And what led you and your wife to decide to found Embrace Race?
So it's definitely a big mix of things. So on the personal side, right, I immigrated from Jamaica to the U.S. as a boy, a black boy of 7 years old. And certainly our experience, the experience of my family in the U.S. Was decidedly shaped by race. My wife, too, is biracial. She was born in this country, but her born of immigrant parents. So, you know, race was salient, race and ethnicity were salient for her family and mine. Then professionally, I've been doing race work and racial justice research and advocacy work for a long time. And my wife, Melissa, spent a lot of time on K-12 education and especially the education of, you know, Latino immigrants and girls of color. But I think the, you know, the crowning factor was becoming parents to two brown-skinned girls who are now 6 and 9. And looking for the resources and community of support to help them, to help us, help them negotiate race, its challenges and opportunities, and realizing that there actually was very little out there. There are definitely excellent organizations aimed at helping teachers in the classroom, but much less aimed at helping parents and other caregivers outside of the classroom and outside of the school context.
Andrew, I think a lot of adults have trouble talking to each other about race and maybe even doing it in the first place. What are some ways to get started with, say, younger kids to start to have productive conversations about what race means?
Well, certainly, you know, there's going to be, it obviously depends somewhat on age, but you're going to want to think about how to be both reactive, right, responsive to what they're bringing to you or what the world brings to your family, and proactive. So number one, I mean, I think you really want to legitimize the conversation with your kids. Race is not only okay to talk about, it's good to talk about, right? And when they bring it up, whatever context that might be, it might be about books, it might be about their friends, school, happenings, things in the neighborhood, patterns that they notice. I think the first thing is, yeah, great. That's an interesting observation. Let's have that conversation rather than squash it, which a lot of parents, especially white parents, try to do. And then, you know, there are any number of ways to think about engaging race. And it's not only about talking. That's really important. So, you know, just to give one example from my own family, you know, again, my girls are 6 and 9. They've had a lot of babysitters over the years. And one thing we've tried to do, which we haven't done nearly as well as we might have, frankly, is in trying to get babysitters, right, where we try to get babysitters who are both male and female, right, and who have all racial stripes, not least so that I, as a black man and black father, I'm not the only male of color they see as a loving provider for them. So that's just a specific example, but there's actually a lot of things we can do.
We're talking to Andrew Grant Thomas about raising kids and talking about race and issues of race with them. He's a co-founder of Embrace Race. Andrew, we heard ahead of the show from Sean on Facebook, who wrote, Martin Luther King Jr. was colorblind. To be colorblind is to try to see people for who they are as a person, not as a member of their race, to judge them by the content of their character, not their skin color. This isn't, Sean writes, mutually exclusive with recognizing racial trends and fighting for equality of opportunity. But this idea Sean's bringing up of maybe we should be working toward colorblindness, you've written elsewhere that doesn't necessarily work out with kids.
Yeah, it doesn't. So, you know, first of all, I'm going to disagree with Sean's premise. I mean, that King was colorblind. I know the content of their character quote is his most famous one. But, you know, consider that he was killed in Memphis, and he had come back to Memphis having been there a few months earlier, you know, helping the striking sanitation workers in Memphis, right? I mean, he knew that the economy certainly wasn't colorblind. But more to the real thrust of Sean's point, I mean, I think on one hand, we can certainly have a talk about whether or not we should aspire to colorblindness, and that might be something we want to do. There are also arguments why it might not be something we want to do, but that's very, aspiring to colorblindness is very different from insisting that the world and our society as it is now is already colorblind, right? So, you know, in a world, in a society in which criminal justice and the economy and healthcare and education and employment are all profoundly race conscious, pretending not to see race when most people and most organizations and most institutions are very race conscious, really is only hurting the people who are most vulnerable to begin with.
I want to bring on a caller now. We've got Jason on the line in Madison. Jason, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Jason?
Well, I have two children. I have a 13-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son, and they have access to social media, and they pay attention to this kind of stuff. And long before, you know, this last huge incident happened, they, you know, they had questions, and I was put in a position where I had to either pick, you know, the parenting sugarcoat method of don't worry about that, you're too young, I'll take care of it, or, you know, listen. And so They don't think there's anything wrong with someone being a different color. My daughter is a part of a group in her middle school that welcomes transgenders and all the different choices that kids can make. And so I've never looked at other people as what you see. I teach my kids that everybody is just like us, which is one second we believe something, the next second we doubt it, the third second we believe it again. And that's how people work. So if you try to identify somebody as a certain type of person, well, then you're just giving, you're doing yourself a disservice. And so I want to tell other parents that if you want your kids to grow up to be open-minded and reasonable, that they can't ever assume, because none of us have met everybody. None of us will ever meet everybody, and because there's so many options of how to be and how to think, labeling somebody based on color or any of those things, especially religious choices and such, that's just, it doesn't even make sense.
Jason, thanks a lot for the call. Andrew, your thoughts on what Jason had to say?
Yeah, well, I appreciate Jason's comment. I guess there are a couple of things to say. On one hand, of course, he's right, right? So there are millions of African-American people, millions more of white people, Latinx people, Asian-Americans, Native Americans, and so on, multiracial people. And there are huge differences, right? There are all the differences you can possibly imagine within each of those groups. So to say that we know someone on the basis of racial identity alone clearly doesn't make sense. On the other hand, as far as that goes, I certainly agree with Jason. On the other hand, the truth is that in this society, we make these distinctions, right? So, you know, let me name just one, but this is not just my sort of personal sense of things. We have tons and tons of research, right, that takes sort of our subjective opinions out of it and tells us what, in fact, we see. So, you know, think about the fact, for example, that our social networks, our friendship circles, are very segregated, right? We know this. There was a poll, a survey done a few years ago in which 75% of white Americans had no close friends who were non-white. Almost as many African Americans, that was true of almost as many African Americans, and true of roughly half of Latino respondents. There in near, you know, in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, a sociologist named David Pager sort of did a very well-known study looking at whether or not, looking at black and white men who had criminal records or did not have criminal records, and whether and how they were able to get jobs. And what she found is that white men with criminal records did better, right, were more successful in the labor market than black men without criminal records. So, you know, again, we can aspire for ourselves, for our society, for our kids to be, quote-unquote, colorblind. But the truth is the society is colorblind. The truth is also that we individually are colorblind. And if Jason's kids are, you know, 13 and 9, I think he said, to think that they don't see race, that, you know, at school they're not talking with their peers and friends about race, is frankly, I mean, unless they're the most unusual and perhaps unique kids in the country, it's frankly just not true.
Andrew Grant Thomas is with us. He's co-founder of Embrace Race. We're talking about the idea of raising race-conscious kids.
And we want to hear from you on this at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about talking to your children about race? How do you handle issues of racial inequity when they come up with your kids? Teachers, what issues and ideas do you have when it comes to tackling these different issues when it comes to your younger students? You can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're picking up our discussion now about talking to your kids about race and racial issues now with Andrew Grant Thomas. He's the co-founder of Embrace Race.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, experiences, and questions. How do you handle issues of race with your own kids or grandkids? Are these issues you bring up or that you try to steer clear of? Do you steer clear of it on purpose or because you don't know what to say? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Andrew, how about that situation I just mentioned? A parent thinking, yeah, I want to talk about issues of race with my kids. I don't know what to do or where to start. How do you recommend they get started? And maybe look for resources, too.
Well, certainly that's why we're here. I mean, we, you know, Embrace Race alone can't fill the gap. It's enormous, but we have a website and a newsletter. The newsletter, for example, is bi-monthly, and every time it comes out, we have a resource section, resources that parents can use in engaging their kids, whether it's about talking or something else. Facebook page where we're posting 3 articles a day that we think will be helpful to people. So there's that, and there's certainly other resources. Again, not so many, but they are proliferating, right? Precisely as you said at the top, because of this time that we live in, because more and more people are recognizing how much racial content there is in a way that we used not to recognize. And Robin, I just wanted to add just one last thing to Jason's point about his kids, which is, you know, maybe here's one way of thinking about it. We like to think that kids, and especially white children, are colorblind. But human beings in general, and certainly children, and all of us, are really good at recognizing patterns, right? And we're really good at recognizing racial patterns. So whether it's about, you know, who goes to my school versus another school, who lives in the homes in that neighborhood versus this one, who plays on this team in school versus that one, who dates whom, who's friends with whom, they recognize that. So that's a given, right? There's not much we can do about that, and it's not obvious we should want to do anything in particular about that. The really crucial question is, what kind of explanations do our kids come to about the patterns that they see, and where are they going to get those explanations from? Are they getting them from us? Do we have some input? Are they more or less informed, more or less thoughtful ones? Or are they just pulling it in from the popular culture, from their peers, whatever it may be? I think that's where we need to focus our attention.
I want to bring on another caller now. Martha is with us in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Yes, hello. This is a great discussion. You know, I don't know if you can raise totally colorblind kids, but you can raise colorly aware kids. And it's not so much what they see, it's how they respond to what they see and how they act. Actions are louder than, you know, any explanation a parent gives. So, first of all, my color aware child was raised by a black grandmother and white parents. And so at family reunions, you know, it was a rainbow out there. So she's had the advantage of growing up from a very young age, you know, exposed to all cultures, and it's been rich. She moved to Menominee, Wisconsin as a fourth grader, walked in her class, sat next to who we call in our family Tiny Bowman, which is a generic name for anyone who's very big and overweight. I walk in 3 days later. I look at the class. She says, "Mom, I'm sitting next to Tiny Bowman." I walk in, she's sitting next to the only African-American child in the class. This is in fourth grade. You got to give kids a little more credit. I think that if you bring up race too early and talk, you're wasting your time. Kids are very aware of this. It's all over Facebook, these little interviews with these adorable children. Tell me how you're different from your friend. Well, he likes horses, I like dogs.
Mm. Martha, thanks for the call. So a couple points there, having role models, different family members in this case, but just being aware and exposed to people from different backgrounds. But then on the other hand, Martha says, don't talk about race too early. So your thoughts, Andrew?
Well, you know, it's... I'm not sure what we can get from particular anecdotes, right? So, you know, it's not as if no one suggests that kids notice only race, right? As if the only thing characteristic that's important to them is, you know, the racial identity of the kid they're sitting next to. So I'm not sure that, you know, identifying, you know, sort of thinking of the black kid she was sitting next to, you know, share some characteristic with another kid who wasn't black. I'm not sure what that tells us. Again, what we know, it's important, I think, to, you know, where we can, to actually pay attention to what seems to be the rule, right, rather than to what may or may not be exceptions, which is why, you know, I hesitate sort of to talk. I certainly don't rely in what we're doing, Embrace Race, on anecdotal accounts. We really do have very, very strong evidence that whether kids refer to race or not, they see race, right? And they make inferences about race. And in fact, very often when kids, certainly by the time a kid is in fourth grade, let's say 9 or 10 years old, she has already learned that many adults, perhaps all the adults in her life, think it's a bad idea, right, that race is a taboo subject. So we have, you know, we have these scenarios where, for example, they do experiments where kids are asked to describe photographs of people to each other, right? So I have a partner, I have in front of me, you know, a picture of someone. And one of the obvious ways to describe the person might be to say, this is a white boy, or this is a, you know, a black boy, or whatever it is. And even in those circumstances, most kids will not describe the racial identity of the person, even in a competitive situation where doing that would allow them to win the game. Right? So, you know, it's not that they don't notice race, it's that we've told them it's wrong to notice race and wrong to talk about it.
Andrew, as we wrap up, you talk about a tip you give at Embrace Race, and on your website, embraceRace.org, is to prepare for a marathon, not a sprint, when it comes to talking with kids about race. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, I think we... so many parents, and again, I think white parents in particular, but not exclusively white parents, are, as you said earlier, Rob, are nervous about talking about race, maybe because they don't know how to do it effectively, even if they think it's the right thing to do. And of course, as we've heard on a couple of these calls, there are some parents who think we really shouldn't talk about race or shouldn't talk about race until, you know, the kid is older rather than younger. And that sort of concern, that kind of fear or trepidation in some cases, can lead people to, you know, place so much emphasis on the talk, right? The race conversation. It's too much pressure, and it's actually not quite the way to think about it. The conversation I have when my daughters were 4 or 5 is a different conversation than I have when they are 7 or 8, and that'll be different again than when they're, you know, 11, 12, and so on. And it's okay to not get it quite right. It's okay to not quite have the answers. It's okay to say, let me get back to you, or let's do some research on that. It's over time, right? It's what's the exposure, what's the conversation, what's the learning over time, both in terms of the conversations we have and what we actually do.
Andrew, that's all the time we have. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Rob, I really appreciate it. Take good care.
You too. That's Andrew Grant Thomas, co-founder of Embrace Race. You can find the group's tip sheet and keep this conversation going over on the Central Time Facebook page.